The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Kennedy. Hugh Hewitt back inside the Beltway after a couple of months in California. Glad to be back. It's cold, it's rainy, but what else is new about Washington, D.C.? So glad you are here. Going to be joined by George a little bit later, the listener who has won the Come Hang with the Host promotion that Salem did a few weeks back. He'll be joining me in studio a little bit later. William Barr, former Attorney General, long interview at the end of today's show that will also extend into the after show and be posted on the internet with the interview with Hugh Hewitt over at the podcast page, but I'll play other parts of that tomorrow. Let me begin with the news of the day by thanking a grand new affiliate, and I say grand, not brand, because it's in the hometown, it's in the land, it's Warren Youngstown, 97.7 FM, WHTX, 1570 AM, the talk of the town news talk at 97.7 FM. So if you're in Youngstown, Warren Niles, you can finally get me without the static from 1420 up in Cleveland. You can go directly to 97.7 FM in Warren and Youngstown. Still love my Cleveland people, and I got to say a note to you. I'm not going to say any more about Deshaun Watson until I know more. I read all the statements from the Browns yesterday. I read all the release from Deshaun Watson's lawyer. I don't like the move. I'm going to wait and see. I'm not going to issue declarations until after I have all the facts, because I'm hoping Kevin Stefanski is right, that it checks out. I don't know what that means. We will wait and see. Let me turn to the news. The United Kingdom says the bulk of Russian forces are stuck 25 clicks outside of Kyiv. Most of the Russian forces are outside of Kyiv and they're not moving. However, the Ukraine's rejection of Mariupol's surrender has angered Russians, so they doubled down on shelling the city last night. I saw some before and after pictures. It's truly a remarkable devastation. And World War II stuff. The Russians are just brutes, just absolute brutes. 10 million Ukrainians have had to flee their homes. 10 million refugees. 8 were killed overnight in a strike on a shopping mall in Kyiv. The United Kingdom is welcoming 9,500 Ukrainian refugees to that country. The assault on Ukraine uproots 10 million people. Wall Street Journal, let me read this to you. Russia's assault on Ukraine has forced more than 10 million people to abandon their homes, the United Nations said. With the scale of the humanitarian disaster showing little signs of easing as Moscow presses its attack with missile strikes and artillery fire. The war in Ukraine is so devastating that 10 million people have fled, either displaced inside the country or refugee abroad, said UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi on Sunday. That means almost a quarter of the country's pre-war population has been uprooted. Roughly 3.5 million people have left Ukraine entirely. The other 6.5 million people have just had to flee their homes. They are flooding primarily, according to the Washington Post, into Warsaw. And its mayor warns that Warsaw is on the brink. Glory to the Poles. Glory to the Ukrainians and glory to the Poles for welcoming everyone. But, of course, the small children are going to school. The apartment buildings are flooded. They need a lot of help. This is where food for the poor comes in. That's why we just need to supplement everything with private sector. In a much predicted but now coming true series of stories, New York Times, Ukraine war threatens to cause a global food crisis. Financial Times, Ukraine war sparks food shortages in Arab nations as wheat prices soar. From the Wall Street Journal, war in Ukraine is already taking its toll on global food suppliers, and it's going to get worse. From the Telegraph, Turkey claims Ukraine and Russia are close to an agreement. Now, I don't trust Erdogan very much, but Godspeed if that's true. Russian Wagner mercenaries, or Wagner mercenaries, I don't know how you say it, have entered Ukraine to assassinate Zelensky. These are the mercs that the American troops destroyed in Syria many years ago on the orders of Jim Mattis. Germany has said it's clinched a long-term deal with Qatar to provide liquid natural gas. This is great. This is great. So Russia has played themselves into an economic disaster that will be enduring, as well as the isolation from the rest of the world. Pray for people aboard a Boeing 737 passenger plane operated by China Eastern Airlines, which crashed. All 130 people on board are believed lost. The United States is sending Patriot missiles to Saudi Arabia because of the Yemen attacks financed by Iran. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas is in the hospital. Prayers for his quick release. He's feeling better. Flu-like symptoms. The Washington Post put out a headline yesterday. It's 70 degrees warmer than normal in eastern Antarctica. Scientists are flabbergasted. No, it's not the end of the world. They're having a warm streak down there. And UP exclusive, an AP exclusive. U.S. Admiral says China has fully militarized its islands, its fake islands, arming them with anti-ship, anti-aircraft missile systems, laser and jamming equipment, fighter jets. They are not our friends. The axis of evil, about which I wrote in the Washington Post today, is Russia, Iran, and the senior partner is the People's Republic of China, the Chinese Communist Party. Don't go anywhere. A lot of show ahead today, including Bill Barr on his magnificent new book, One Damn Thing After Another. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. As a child in Warren, Ohio, I attended Pius X Monday through Friday. And on Fridays in Lent, I ate dinner there because that's where the fish fry was. It was our parish, and the fish fry endures. As Selena Zito of the Washington Examiner reports this morning. Hello, Selena. How are you?
Good morning, sunshine. I'm awesome.
Love this column. Pius X is still going strong on the west side of Warren, Ohio. I don't know if they have their fish fry anymore, but explain to people what a fish fry is and where it comes from.
So the American fish fry, it is actually a very American event. It came from the immigrants, German Catholics, Irish Catholics, Italian Catholics, whatever, to their fast of meat on Fridays. In fact, it used to be it was every Friday you couldn't have meat, not just during Lent. I think it was 1966 when that changed, and it's only during Lent. And parishes started holding them because, well, first of all, it's sort of like a chicken and the egg, right? What came first, the parish or the parishioners? Because there's all these migrants from all these different European countries and all these Catholics. And so they started holding them in their church basements. And they quickly became a great way not just to have fish that was inexpensive. It was very, very, and particularly very popular at the Great Lakes Midwest, like where you and I grew up, because the access to the fish from the Great Lakes. It was an inexpensive way to feed people.
Yeah, you know, the derogatory term mackerel snapper is actually rooted in the fact that Catholics did not, until 1966, ever eat meat on a Friday. After 1960 in Vatican II, that was limited to a Lenten practice, and I still don't eat meat on Friday. There are exceptions for people who need to eat meat, etc., and if you forget, it's not a mortal sin, all that stuff. But we just line up, and by the way, the parish made a little money on it too, but the family saved money because it was pretty cheap to do the Great Lakes fish.
Yeah, and the same holds true today. You know, a lot of this was turned to either takeout or they just stopped doing it during COVID. And I wrote about it 2 years ago, and people were just, they missed that sense of community, of seeing each other, of catching up and connecting. But one of the other things that are, you know, you also see, it's not just Catholic churches that have them, but, you know, volunteer fire companies or like mine at the Elks, these social fraternal groups And the line is everywhere. I mean, the line go wraps around the block at the Elks that I was at last week. The week before, it lined up, I saw it lined up in front of two parishes, which were only a block apart, along with the Croatian Hall. And people sit in these cafeteria-like tables, and you're sitting with people you've never met before. And all of a sudden, you're having conversations, and you're finding out that connectivity that you have with each other.
You know, I do not know if Eastern Orthodox or Greek Orthodox or Russian Orthodox have the Lenten fast. I know the Coptics do, and the Copts do, not the Coptic. The Coptic church are full of Copts. And so I don't know if they run fish fries, but I know that at every church in Warren, I mean, sometimes one parish would do it and two parishes, but the dads would do it as well.
Yeah.
It was it's not brought in by some catering service. They learned how to fry fish. And if there was one staple of every Catholic refrigerator in the 60s, it was Mrs. Paul's fish sticks, right?
That's absolutely true. Although I think we had, we had a fishing cottage along Lake Ontario. So ours came from our frozen fish left over from the summer before. But yeah, and the dads and the moms still do it. It's still the members of the parish, or they enlist the young people, too, to be part of it. Lots of times they're the ones that are deliver, you know, take it to your table. But it is, it's homemade. I mean, the filleted fish are back there. They have the assembly line, the eggs, the flour, the batter. And there's also pierogies, mac and cheese, coleslaw, or french fries, sometimes hush puppies.
I have to say, the only counterpart to this is the parish festival, which is another part of America that you don't get unless you belong to Catholic parish. And they're usually unique by their food, right?
Yes. Around here, there's the Italian one. There's the Ukrainian one. There is the German one. There's the Irish one. I mean, you could go every weekend and have your fill of Catholicism and great food.
By the way, that's where I learned to gamble.
Oh, and gambling too, yeah.
Yeah, you gamble. I mean, you play games of chance and the wheel spins and there are rides, et cetera, and they make money. That's it. Look, in the old days, when people didn't make a lot of money, they had to make money some way. So they filled needs for community, and one of those things was the fish fry. This is a great column, Selina. Have you gotten a lot of comments on it?
Yeah, I have. Thank you so much.
SelinaZito.com for all things Selina. Always here for the Yinzer Report. Thank you, Selina. Don't go anywhere. William Barr coming up, America, on Hour 3 of today's Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So, if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. Dana Perino joins me now from Fox News. Her brand new paperback edition of Everything Will Be Okay is in bookstores now. I was late coming in from the break because I wanted to make sure I plugged it over on Twitter. Good morning, Dana. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm great. I'm very well. Thank you.
Whenever I have an author on, if I don't put up the Twitter account, people get mad at me because they hear about the book and they want, they want to go and get the book and they look for it easy. They want to go find, they want to type in Dana Perino and Amazon.com and everything will be okay. Instead, I just put it over on Twitter and they can get it. George, welcome. Good to have you. I have a listener joining me. So, Dana, tell me a little bit about the new expanded edition of Everything Will Be Okay.
Sure. You were gracious and wonderful to have me on before when the book came out. And I wrote the title before COVID even had entered our lives. But it turned out to be, for a lot of people, the right book at the right time and something that they needed to hear. And I was thrilled with how the hardback did. And then in the paperback, I wanted to provide an update of what it was like for me, you know, dealing with COVID and coming out of it. But also, there's something I added that I really like that I'll just share with you here, and that was, you know, I went through a period of grief during COVID, and it was that my beloved dog Jasper had passed, and he was taken, you know, too soon from cancer. And I was going through the grieving process, and I felt, you know, loved and okay. And I kept thinking, like, why am I okay? I don't understand. Shouldn't I be on the floor, you know, writhing in pain? And my heart was broken. And I realized that I have started this gratitude practice 5 years ago when my first book had come out.
Yep.
Seven years ago, excuse me. And it was, I talk about this in Everything Will Be Okay, that the gratitude practice for me was a way to stay grounded and to not be in a bubble and to try to be more present with other humans. And what I've come to realize is that if you are going through anything, whether it be the loss of a loved one, even if it's a pet, or any sort of difficulty, that gratitude leads to more resilience, which leads you back to what I am always searching for, which is serenity. And it's a wonderful loop.
What is the gratitude practice discipline, Dana?
So I started by doing a gratitude journal, and that was initially just on scrap pieces of paper. But now, if you go to any bookstore, there's some beautiful books that can keep you motivated to want to pick that up every day. And maybe just write down three things that you're grateful for that day. And it gets you into the habit of that. But the other thing I did, Hugh, was I tried to look at every person I came in contact with rather than being on my phone. For example, like on the subway, when I used to take the subway, when it was safer. And I would sit there and think, why am I on my phone all the time? Let me look around at these people that...
On the subway? You're making eye contact on the subway? Isn't that dangerous in New York?
I wouldn't know. You know what? There's not a lot of eye contact. But I was like, well, I don't want to be this person that's just like always on my phone. So the subway is just an example. You can do this at the airport. You can do it on your way to work, at your work. As if I passed somebody in the hallway, I would just send a little message of, I hope they're having a great day. I hope everyone is good to them today. I hope they have what they need. I hope she passes that test. I hope nobody is mean to them today, because I always hate it when people are mean to customer service workers or retailers. And it just became a habit that I had, that it was very personal and private, but I decided to talk about it in the book. And then I realized in writing the new material for the paperback that it actually really helped me get through all of that.
Well, Dana, that is terrific. I got to tell you about the cell phone deal. This weekend, I went down to see my two-year-old and my other grandkids, one of whom is seven-year-old and playing Little League, which is torture, right? But I watched the game and made eye contact, and they look up always to see if you're watching, and there are lots of cell phones in the stands now. This is different than when my kids were young. Parents are there, but they're not there. And if you're not watching your kid, you're not actually there. And that matters
and
to them
a
lot.
And they know it.
Yep. They do
and
know
we
it.
All do it. You know, I do it too. You know, at dinner, I got to check and see if with the new puppy, I got to check the little app to see if he's still sleeping and I don't have to go home. And it does distract you. And I found that putting the phone down and just being present, even if it's a moment to be contemplative and prayerful, that to me has, I think it's helped in other aspects of my life.
Now, Dana, on every television set, and you're on one every morning, there are probably about 20 people wandering around. Is that a good guess?
There's fewer now, but let's call it 10.
Okay, so there's a best person and a worst person. And I did 10 years of nightly television news, and I always made it a point to try and find the most problematic person and talk to them, because they're problematic for a reason. Something's wrong with their life. What do you do with the people in the television business who are difficult?
Gosh, I know what you mean. I do think that there's sometimes there are people who are kind of grumpy, and I try to be more cheerful to try to counteract it and surprise them.
Yeah, well, there's always...
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, there's some people who adopt the professional demeanor of Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, and that's just how they get through the day. And there's some people who are the opposite and garrulous. But retaining your gratitude through a long day of television grind is not an easy thing to do, is it?
I tell you, Hugh, I think that it's become a little bit easier because of this practice. I do think that it's a discipline and a little bit of a kind of a meditation. And I'm not a monk by any means. And believe me, I feel like I always just feel like, one, I'm never prepared as I want to be, which propels me to try to be the most well-read person in the room and stay competitive. But I also feel like there's always something more that I could be doing. I'm just so privileged, and I'm grateful that I get to do this work and tell these stories and try to explain things to people. I love to study. I love to listen. Like, your program is so helpful. Like, the interviews that you do, whether I have a chance to listen or if I read the transcript, or I really like it when you write your columns because I feel like they're so clear-headed. And I try to just be as well-read as possible so that I can keep doing what I'm doing, and I love what I do.
Have you had a chance to interview former Attorney General Barr? He's coming on the show today at 8:30. I'm going to talk to him for 90-minute interview. So that took a lot of prep time. But One Damn Thing After Another may be the best memoir in its category that I've ever read. I mean, it is just, former President Bush, for whom you work, he wrote a good memoir, but he did it in his six big challenges. It wasn't a comprehensive look over. Barr's is comprehensive, and I read memoirs. I may be the only person on the planet who read John Kerry's memoir. But I read this is. Have you had a chance to read Barr's yet?
I have not read his, but I have it here on my desk, and I haven't. I wasn't here last week, so I didn't interview him. But I have talked with him, and I saw him in a green room the other day, and we had a chance just to exchange some pleasantries. He had a young gal that worked for him named Carrie Kupek.
Good friend of mine. Yep.
Works at
Good
Fox.
Friend of mine.
Yeah, and so everything will be okay. There was a couple of conversations that she and I had that informed my thinking about how to try to help young women who are making their way up the ladder in their careers.
Carrie worked at Alliance Defending Freedom.
He was a very great mentor and boss to her, and became a good friend.
He was, and she has said that often. And Carrie and I have talked about the up-talking chapter in your book, because she doesn't up-talk. and I always bring it up with you because I can't say it enough. It is a huge impediment to the advancement of young women in the workplace. And it came up this weekend somewhere. I don't know where it was. Somebody up-talked. And my wife and I, it was before I left California to come back to D.C., we both looked at each other and said, Dana. And that's our code word for up-talking. That's what we do.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That makes me so happy. I actually turned off a podcast the other day because I really wanted to listen to the interview, but I couldn't stand the host up-talking. So I was like, well, I can't listen to that. To your point, it does hurt your career.
It does. And that's why our shorthand, we got to have shorthand ways of communicating. Dana is the shorthand for up-talking. Dana, let me do a little bit of news with you.
Everybody does that.
Yeah. What do you think is the end game for Ukraine? When you sit around with Bill and you talk, because you do a real news show, you're covering real news as opposed to just giving opinion. So you study what General Jack Keane and others say. What do you think is the end game here?
I wish I could say, Hugh, this is such a very difficult dilemma. And in some ways, right now, with NATO involved, but figuring out what they're going to do, this battle feels like a continuation or maybe the last battle of World War II.
Oh, that's interesting. Or the first battle of World War III. Dana, you were in the White House when Putin went into Georgia. Mm-hmm. How did Bush react to that? Former President Bush, George W. Bush, was on watch when Putin made his first move. What do you remember of that?
Oh, well, this is very interesting. We were at the in Beijing for the opening night of the Olympics there in 2008. And I was sitting with other White House staff, and the president was in the leader's box. And I looked up, and on the Jumbotron, I saw 43 and Putin talking, but it seemed like it was very heated conversation. And only later did I find out that 43 had gone over to Vladimir Putin, or vice versa, and he said, you get your troops out of there. You need to get your troops out of there. And he said, I know I told you that Saakashvili, who was the leader of Georgia at the time, is a hot-blooded guy. Don't let him provoke you. And Vladimir Putin said, well, I'm hot-blooded too, George. And 43 said, no, Vladimir, you're cold-blooded.
Is that in your book anywhere?
It's in his book.
Okay, I've forgotten
that. I believe it's in his book towards the end, yeah.
Well,
so that was their exchange. And then the other thing he said he told him is that there are only going to be two people in the world who will support you. And that'll be Danny Ortega and Fidel Castro. And it turned out that was true. So what's different between then and now? You have a different Chinese leader. right? Yep. And it was with a very different outlook. And now Russia's friends might include, I don't know specifically, but Iran possibly, but China trying to straddle this world. I mean, that's a very different situation than back in 2008.
You've put your finger on it. The biggest difference is the rise of Xi and the authoritarianism and the totalitarianism of China. Dana, always a pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on the paperback edition of Everything Will Be Okay. I recommended it highly the last time. I continue to recommend it. It's got so many life lessons in it, and I encourage everyone to go out and get it. Dana, thank you so much for joining me earlier.
You made my day with the shorthand. Thank you.
The Dana question, it's what we do when we hear it, and now we may have to change it. If people listen to the show, they'll know what we're talking about when that happened. Dana Perino, thank you. Follow her on Twitter, Dana Perino.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.